Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, this is Steve Sciarippa, better known as Bobby Bacala, and the Michael K. Show starts now, right here on 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Michael, Don, Peter, do me a favor. Don't screw this thing up, would you?
Well, that's the intent, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Monday, April 4th, 2022. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg. We're apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours. The other 20, that's your responsibility. Hope everybody's doing well. Don, how are you?
Very good. More importantly, how are you?
I actually feel okay. Took a turn better Saturday than better Sunday, and today I feel almost back to normal, and I'm lucky. For those that don't know, I tested positive for COVID last Tuesday, and the worst thing I really felt was like a really bad cold. So I didn't have the high temperature. I didn't lose the smell and the taste that a lot of people deal with, and obviously didn't go through the hell that Don went through. So I guess I'm very fortunate, and maybe it was the fact that I'm boosted that helped me through it. I don't know, but so far, so good, and we're giving a try of the voice, Don, for 4 hours.
Well, we'll see. We got your back, no question, and you did the right thing. You did what I didn't do, and I worked through it from home through my quarantine, and it probably was not the most intelligent thing to do. So the fact that you were able to take those days off, rest up for 5 days, kind of take it slow, probably for the best.
Well, back, and I don't know if I'm better than ever, but I am back, so thank you for holding down the fort, Don and Peter, as well.
Our
heard you guys were great. I listened to a lot of the shows and, you know, didn't skip a beat. Didn't skip a beat. Not a beat. Actually made me feel bad.
Hey, I felt the same way when I was out. We all work together. When one piece is out, we fight through it.
Like, beautiful.
Like the Eagles Super Bowl, right, Andrew? You lose your starting quarterback and your starting left tackle. What do? You go win the Super Bowl.
And that's what you guys did.
That's it.
So the last time I worked was Tuesday. And strangely enough, and you know this, Don, just as we were about to go on the air, I tested positive.
Yeah,
so I was not in the right frame of mind. But got through it. And actually, before I tested positive, I had done a center stage interview with Carlos Beltran. And this was the first time that Beltran had actually spoken about the Astros situation. And there's a couple of things that reared its head to me. I wonder if you think the same thing. All these people that defend the Astros, they didn't do anything wrong. Well, Beltran said they did something wrong. He said, now when we were doing it, I don't think we thought we were doing anything wrong. We just thought we were trying to gain an advantage. But I did ask him, do you think that the championship is tainted? He said, yes, it is. And he also blamed the front office. And I kind of blame the front office as well. That's why Lou now is the guy that's probably going to be hurt the most by this. They got a letter from Rob Manfred at the beginning of September of 2017 and said, this has to stop. All electronic sign stealing must stop. And you know what? The front office never told anybody in the dugout. Because Beltran said, if anybody told us to stop, we'd stop. He said, but nobody told us to stop. We never knew about that letter until I was investigated. And he also felt, and I think he's right, by the way, he's, you know, making his broadcast debut right now. That's why it was just a radio vehicle until the Yankee-Philly game is over. Don, he said, why am I the only one that's being punished? He said, they assured me when I was interviewed that no players would be punished and no players would be named in the report. He said, but there was my name, Carlos Beltran. He said, I'm not the only person who dealt with it. He said, why was I the only one? I've always thought that too.
Yeah.
Hinch got the job you know, got a job the next year after serving a year suspension. Cora got the Red Sox job back. I don't think Lunau is ever going to work in big leagues again. But Carlos Beltran had the Met job for a couple of days and then got fired. So he's the one who's been punished the most. Think about it. Of all the people that were involved, that were uniform personnel, the only person that ever has ever even felt it is Beltran.
Because he was the only one, Michael, that kind of was allowed to be punished. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, at the time he did this, he was a player. But at the time that the discipline came down, he was no longer a player. So he didn't fall under the immunity that was handed out to the players because he was no longer a player. And he got disciplined like everybody else did. Except he never got a chance to build up any equity as a manager to get a job that he never had back.
Well, here's the thing that really stunk for him, Don. When he was interviewed in the investigation, he was interviewed as a player protected by the union.
Right.
And the union said the only way that players are speaking is if they get total immunity. And that's why no one got punished. Because Manfred wanted the truth. So, once he got the Met job, managers are not represented by the players' union.
That's right.
So he was not disciplined by anybody. The Mets just couldn't stand the heat. And I understand. He said, I think I could have dealt with it. He said, I was going to speak with the team. You guys don't have to answer anything about this. I will. He said it would have been a couple of weeks, and then it would have stopped. He's probably right. But he kind of falls in that nebulous area, Don, where, okay, nobody really punished him, but he's been punished the most, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, but it just he kind of falls in between because, like I said, he couldn't get the break that the players got. And then Hinch and Cora had built up reputations as managers to where after they got let go, they were able to easily find another job. Here's Beltran was going to coach, be a manager for the first time ever in the biggest city in the world. And it was just a PR disaster. And he hadn't built up any equity as a manager to say, we've got to rush him back. So the Mets ended up moving on. And I think he will get another opportunity, Michael. It's just going to take probably a little bit longer. But he just got caught in between, where he just didn't really have enough equity as a manager and didn't have the backing of the Players Association. So he was kind of floating around in between, and that's why it looks like he got punished the most. And also, there was the reputation that he was the ringleader, like this was his thing. He brought it to Houston, right? That seemed to be like the at least the feeling was that he introduced this whole idea to the Astros.
And he
Is that fair?
No, I guess, but again, as a player.
Yeah.
So all players are supposed to be protected, and simply he was not. So it's kind of, you're right, it falls between the cracks of him being protected, and he got screwed worse than anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, he lost a Mets job. That's a pretty big punishment. But it was the Mets who did it. Major League Baseball didn't. But you wonder, did Major League Baseball nudge the Mets? You know, we can't have him be the, you know, the manager of a New York team after what he did. Who knows? Who knows? But he did get punished more than anybody. And I think that this, what he's doing with Yes, being a broadcaster, that can only help him. Brings him back into the public eye. It worked with Girardi, worked with Boone on ESPN, worked with Buck last year. You know, when you're out there again and you're speaking on Yes, where obviously, you know, a lot of people in baseball watch, it's a New York team, it's the Yankees, all of a sudden you're back in the forefront of their mind. So this could actually help Beltran.
Well, this too shall pass, right? I mean, it's still very fresh, especially here in New York, especially after the comments last week by Brian Cashman. But as you start to move down the road here, and we've already seen players leave Houston. Houston's won another championship, although I think something fishy was going on there in 2019, but still nothing was proven. Cora and Hinch got their jobs back, and they've moved on. And I do think what the Mets saw in Beltran, somebody else will see as well. I mean, this guy comes with a very, very high reputation. I remember when he was traded to the Giants for Zach Wheeler, the Giants, all the young players fell in love with him. How he was like a coach on the field, and that's how it's felt. So I think enough time will pass. As you said, high-profile gig here with the Yankees. People are not going to forget his name, and I would not be surprised if we're talking this time next year, he's a manager of somebody in Major League Baseball.
And it was also weird, Don, when I said, well, why did you do it? He said, well, we felt that the teams that were coming in to play the Astros were doing stuff that was not right. So we wanted to beat them at their own game. And he also said something interesting, that you've got a situation where the Astros used to have their video room up in the clubhouse. Most teams have their video room right behind the dugout. He said, so we just moved the television into the alleyway between the clubhouse and the dugout so we have easy access to it. And then that turned into the trash can banging. But it's funny. Astro fans don't want to hear this, Don. I mean, I don't understand what their kick was, because the players admit that they did something. And they want to legitimize the championship. And, you know, as long as it's not taken away with them or from them, it is legitimate. But even Beltran said, I think that it's stained. And I think that's a good way to put it. But they're probably not going to lose a championship. They're not going to take down the flag. But the most interesting thing I felt was he feels there's a lot of teams in baseball that do stuff that's right on the edge.
God, this just – the defense mechanism is very – it just smells of the PEDs, doesn't it? Well, I was just trying to keep up with everybody else. Everybody else was doing it. Like, you don't know. Like, listen, I respect Carlos Beltran, but how do we know that this wasn't something that, you know, they knew exactly what they were doing? Do we even know for a fact, Michael, that the management didn't tell them about the letter? Or was this all just a grand scheme by the team altogether? Like, who cares about the letter? We're going to do what we're going to do, because we've got a system. It's working for us. We're going to make it happen. You know, so I don't know what to believe, and I respect the fact that he believes that it's tainted. But I'm not shocked that Astro fans – how would Yankee fans feel if the shoe was on the other foot, Michael? Would they concede that their team cheated? Would a Met fan concede that their team tweeted? Or would they do the exact same thing that Astro fans have been doing? I think they probably would do that.
Yeah, but it's hard to, like, stare in the face of players admitting it. You know what I mean? I mean, they admitted it.
Well
And the Astro fans' response is almost what Beltran said. Yeah, but everybody does it. Well, not everybody's been caught. Like, everybody speeds.
Right.
But you only get a ticket if you get pulled over. They got pulled over.
But don't the Yankee fans defend Pettit because Pettit said that he was just trying to overcome injury, be there for his team, and they choose to believe that.
Of course.
You know, and other PED guys around, you know, they don't want to believe Ortiz when he said he didn't do it. They don't want to believe anybody else's excuses. So I've got no problem with Astro fans defending, and I think they're the only ones that do, Michael. I think everybody outside of Houston or outside of an Astro fans accept that what they did was wrong and the championship should be taken away. It's not, we'll move on and Carlos will get another job, but I still don't know what to – I mean, again, I respect Carlos, but are we supposed to just take what he says at face value and automatically just believe – that, hey, everybody was doing it, that they didn't hear from management they weren't allowed to do it? Or was it just the arrogance it was something that was working for them and they were not going to stop it?
I don't think the front office told them. I believe that, because why would Beltran lie about this? This is his, you know, get right tour. And he said, we never told by the front office. And I think they told that to the commissioner as well. And that's why the front office got in trouble. That's why they had 2 first-round draft picks taken away and $5 million, and Lou now lost his job, all because of that. So I believe that they didn't tell him, because the front office probably thinking this, Don, hey, how's it working out? What are they going to do? They can't catch us.
It's just, it's hard to believe a cheat.
That's true.
You know, it's hard to give the benefit of the doubt to a cheater when he said he didn't know. I wasn't looking at the test. I didn't get the answers, you know, and the whole thing just stinks to high heaven. And I do feel bad for Carlos, because it looks like he's the only one that's been punished, and maybe he won't get another job. Maybe he'll fall in love with television, or there won't be another job next year. And the next thing you know, 10 years goes by and he doesn't get a managerial job. And I do think that stinks, but I'm sorry, from afar, I find it difficult to believe any of those guys and what they have to say and what their defense is and the pointing the fingers and stuff, because it's hard, because what they did was wrong. And I still believe, outside of Carlos Beltran, they got away with it.
Well, we're in the middle of Diamond Notes, brought to you by Nissan. Another thing that we have to talk about, Don, you know, it kind of happened late on Friday, but, you know, Scherzer has a hamstring problem. Now, he said that he's always had hamstring issues, it's never blown out, and that, you know, he knows how to take care of it. But if you take Scherzer out of the equation, at least for the first time around, Don, Mets really don't have a starter for opening day, because everybody else is not on pace to start on Thursday. They're just not. And that's how fragile this could be when your team is built around pitching. And the Mets have a good team even without pitching. But when your team, I mean, the strength of your team is pitching, you have to hold your breath, especially when one of the pitchers, Jacob DeGrom, who cannot stay on the field for more than 20 starts a year. Also, I mean, Jacob DeGrom really swings it around, Don. So when he finally spoke over the weekend, he said, yeah, I'm still going to opt out. Really, bud? You're still going to opt out? That's what you're thinking about? How about getting on the field? How about pitching? I mean, to say you're still going to opt out, what if he gives him 10 starts? Does he think somebody's going to give him a lot of money? He's proven that he can't stay on the field.
Yeah, I don't even know. Listen, I get his confidence and his bravado. And listen, I hope, as a Met fan, he has enough this year to opt out. That's what I'm hoping for.
Right.
Because then that means he's flirting with a Cy Young, pitching outstanding, and the Mets are competing to win a championship. So that's kind of what I'm hoping for. But if he thinks that he's going to make 5-6 starts, even if they're all brilliant, coming off of back-to-back seasons in which he made half his starts, you think somebody's going to give him big-time money, or is he going to have to stick around, and prove it with the Mets and continue with the contract that he has? And I'm sure you were listening, Michael, but we had Buster Olney back on Friday, who said that the main reason, according to a lot of baseball people that he talked to, that the Mets were so aggressive to give Scherzer the contract they did because they believed DeGrom was not going to be able to finish the season. That what was bothering him last year was going to rear its ugly head again. They were hoping they'd get a lot out of him. I don't think they were expecting him not be able to start on opening day and miss the first 2.5 months of the season. But they went out and got Scherzer as an insurance policy that Michael kicked in instantaneously before the season even started.
Right.
And now your plan B is one of the best pitchers in baseball, but he is 37 years old. And now he might not be able to make his opening day start because of a hamstring. Oh, it's just so frustrating.
And the thing that gets me about DeGrom that worries me, this isn't what derailed him yesterday or last year. This is something different. This is a stress fracture in the scapula. So that should heal. Players have had it before. And it still doesn't address what knocked him out at the end of last year. I look at it this way, and this is from a totally layman point of view. I don't think he could throw 100 miles an hour every pitch of the game. I don't think he can. I don't think the human body could take it. So, yeah, he could have stretches of brilliance. I don't think he could hold up. And because everybody I speak to in baseball say he has a perfect delivery. Okay, yeah, but that's not normal to do that. The reason why he's so extraordinary is because it's not normal. No one does it. I don't think anybody could do that for any length of time.
Well, again, the other thing that Buster said was the Mets talked to him about trying to dial it down, and he refused. He said he's just not built that way. He's too competitive. So every pitch has to be like it's the final pitch of Game 7 of the World Series. And I thought about this over the weekend, Michael, because we had arguments last year. Well, you can't tell an athlete not to dial it down. I'm not saying not to give 100%, but I think you have to come up with a way to be able to survive another inning, to survive another start, survive another year. Do you have to strike out the opposing pitcher last year with a 97-mile-per-hour filthy slider? I think he got caught up in the historic season. We all did. And he'd throw 100 miles per hour and try to make the next pitch 101. Michael, if LeBron James didn't take care of his body early and didn't at times learn to kind of dial it down, do you think he'd still be playing at 36 years old?
I mean, that's pick your spots.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying is that what makes an athlete great is to be able to do it over a long period of time. I think a lot of these athletes can go out and give you 1 year in which they just throw it all out there, and then what happens the next year, the year after that, they're not around. Go out there and try to get everybody out and do the best that you can. But every once in a while, do you have to throw 100 miles per hour 11 times, or will 98 do the trick? Will 97 do the trick?
And then there's this. A lot of people, I look at Jacob DeGrom, and it worries me that he's going to be Tim Lincecum. For a period of 3 years, there was nobody better. Tim Lincecum won 2 Cy Youngs, never making the Hall of Fame. But a lot of fans think, well, DeGrom on the strength of those years should make the – no. He's got to do some stuff. I mean, if you watch the Don Mattingly-Donnie baseball thing on MLB yesterday, for 5 years, Don Mattingly was as good a player as has ever been in baseball. He's not in the Hall of Fame. So Jacob DeGrom is not getting in the Hall of Fame despite the fact that when he's on the mound, he's unhittable. But you got to be on the mound, Don. And for the Mets, it's real nice to have him in the back pocket. But unless he can pitch, what does it mean?
I love – Jacob DeGrom, I love that he is so special and wins Cy Youngs. But ultimately, as a fan, I want a championship. I want to win a World Series. So if Jacob DeGrom goes 15-7 and the Mets win 100 games to win the World Series, I'd rather that than him to go 28-0 and the Mets finish 500. All right, so I would like his contribution to be to a championship. So, hey, whether he makes the Hall of Fame or not, I'm rooting for him to make the Hall of Fame. But ultimately, I want him to pitch effectively so this team can win a championship. And I don't think they can, Michael, if he's not going out there every 5 days and pitching. This is going to be 2 years now where he is going to miss a bulk of time. Now, I don't think he's injury prone, but over the last couple of years, something's up. And what good is this great pitcher if he's not going to be able to give you 30 starts?
I would beg to differ. I mean, guys that suffer catastrophic injuries like being hit by a pitch or running into a wall and they get hurt, you know, I think it's unfair to call them injury prone. This guy gets hurt pitching. He's injury prone because I don't think the human body can handle that sort of torque.
Well, I agree with you in that sense. I'm saying that I'm defending his record where, like, we were getting phone calls on Friday. This guy's always hurt. Well, recently he has been. You look at his long career, which started in 2014 in that interleague game against the Yankees. He has been able to make 30-plus starts pretty much every year. And now over the now this is going to be two straight years he can't. At a time now where this team looks like they're ready with the ownership, with the manager, to be a championship team right now.
And can I tell everybody out there that's a baseball fan, you know which way to root? Even if you're a Yankee fan, you root for Jacob DeGrom to get back. Jacob DeGrom is wondrous to watch. He's unbelievable. You want him to come back. You want him to make at least 20 starts. He's going to miss 2 months. You know, everybody said, well, 4 weeks. That's 4 weeks of being shut down. So once he gets shut down, they have to put him in an MRI tube again and then start him all over again, Don. If you get him back by June 1st, you should be thrilled. And as Buck Showalter says, like acquiring a great pitcher. Okay, that's a good way to look at it. But do you feel, as a Met fan, Don, do you feel really certain that he's going to give you the 20 straight starts or he's going to get hurt again?
Hey, I think he's going to get hurt again. I mean, if he continues to go out there and pitch as ferociously as he does, yeah. Because, you know, he's not getting any, he's 33 years old.
Yep.
Now, he hasn't thrown as many innings as Kershaw, but he's the same age as Kershaw, who, by the way, just signed a one-year contract with the Dodgers. All right? So, you know, as you start to get older, you're going to have to try to figure out a way. He's probably sooner than later, Michael, going to have to change the way he pitches anyway, even if he stayed healthy.
Yep.
You know, Pedro changed, CC changed. I mean, you're not going to be able to go out there, unless you're Nolan Ryan, throw 100 miles per hour when you're 37, 38 years old without finding a way to break down. So I just, listen, he's brilliant. He's fun to watch. And this hurts baseball too, Michael, because as much as we love the home runs and the runs scored and everything, part of what made me fall in love with baseball was watching great pitching and great pitching duels. We don't even see it anymore with the analytics because these guys aren't allowed to face the order a third time. But with these guys constantly getting hurt, I don't want to see openers. I don't want to see 7, 8 different pitching changes. I want to see great starting pitchers do great things. And how often do we get to see it between the analytics and now guys getting hurt?
Well, that's today's Diamond Notes brought to you by Nissan. Nissan's an easier choice than ever with their exciting and fuel-efficient lineup. Now get great offers across their full line. Shop at your local Nissan store, nissanusa.com. Let's talk with you. I've missed you guys. 1-800-919-3776.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Talk some basketball, too. What a great game on Saturday. And we're going to talk to Jay Williams at 4:30. We have a big matchup today for the national championship. So there's a lot on the plate. Big announcement later on in the show. And Aaron Boone's going to join us at 5 o'clock. So please, yeah, he will. Stay tuned. Kay, LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
J.P. Sears, left-hander, made the start for the Yankees today. Game they were leading the Phillies 5-2, bottom of the eighth. And after he got taken out of the game, Aaron Boone told him he's making the team.
All right.
So this kid was 10-2, 3.46, 25 games, 18 starts last year between AA and AAA. Yankees had acquired him many years ago in a deal with the Mariners for Nick Rumbelow. So that's why you can't judge these deals. Looks like a left-hander that could get people out. Fastball sits between 93 and 95. It's topped out in spring at 97. And he's pretty much a fastball pitcher. So he will make the team. 5'11", 180 pounds.
That's awesome.
Imagine that's how he feels.
It's great whenever you see that, like on the Hard Knocks. And I remember – Showtime had something with baseball, and they did the Giants, I think, back in Brandon Belt's rookie year, and he's in the office, and Bruce Bochy told him he made the team, and he broke down and cried. You know, it's like you hear stories like that, especially guys that you don't expect to make the team, even if they've been around, just to know that they can extend it, that they've accomplished their goal, that's awesome.
And, you know, he's 26, so finally getting a shot. Shot out of the gate. All right, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Fred in Atlanta. Freddie.
Hey, guys. Michael, welcome back.
Thank you, man.
Michael, one of your famous sayings is sunlight is a great disinfectant.
Yep.
And that's why it made me sad to see Randy Levine and the Yankees file a 15-page appeal on Friday. I'm sure you saw it in the Post with the Second Court of Appeals. And they said they'd be willing to take it all the way to the Supreme Court. And Don had said, if your team is cheating, would you want to know? And I would want to know, and I'd want the people to be held accountable to be, you know, dealt with. I know at the time it wasn't illegal per se, but I think we all have a morality, you know, center of ourselves. And if the Yankees did something wrong, I want to know about it. And if the players or the coaches or the front office, you know, I think those people should be held accountable, just like in any, you know, if you did something wrong in your job and it wasn't illegal, you know, it would still get disclosed and you'd be written up and you'd be disciplined about it, you know, and you know, people in your office would know about it. The HR people would know, you know, your management people would know, your PD would know, you know. And so I think it's wrong to have the Yankees try to hide this letter. I think we need to let it come out and see what's happened. And, you know, the sunlight will, you know, let us all know what's going on.
I'm curious, Fred. I'm extremely curious what could be in the letter that they would fight like this. And I don't think, Don, there's anything in the letter that could be that damaging. They didn't do anything in 2015. None of that stuff was illegal. The commissioner, I think the one who has the most to lose is the commissioner, because he announced publicly that what they did was insignificant. Well, if it's significant, he actually lied publicly. So even if it comes out that the Yankees were doing something untoward, it wasn't illegal at that point. You know, a lot of Astro fans see, well, what they did in 2000, what wasn't illegal in 2015? And that's why they sent the letter. But the Yankees are fighting tooth and nail to keep this closed. I wonder what's in it. I have no idea
In it. Don't you think, Michael, the more you fight it, it feels like it's bigger than it might actually be? So now people will begin to fantasize, like, what is really being hidden? Why are they taking it to the Supreme Court? What could possibly be in there? If it's just something like the Apple Watch, well, then so what?
Right.
What are you fighting it for? But is it something bigger? And then on the heels of what Brian Cashman said, Michael, he must be pretty sure there's nothing in that letter. But for him to feel he got robbed of a World Series appearance because they were cheating, he better not ever have that letter come out that they were doing something that was similar.
Yeah, it's funny that, you know, he said that, because what Fred said, I think everybody in the Yankee organization knows what's in that letter. And the Yankees, from what I could tell, they felt it was unfair and never should have been brought up in the previous case. And they feel that this was kind of like collateral damage, why this was even brought up and it shouldn't be open. But what could be in there that they're fighting to this extent, other than just for the right that it shouldn't be open, that it wasn't involved with the case? But we'll see. I mean, the court will ultimately decide. Let's go to Ray in East Orange. Ray.
Hey, Mike, Don, Pete. It's great to hear from you guys again. Welcome back, Mike.
Thank you.
Actually calling for my job. About this Carlos Beltran interview that you had with him the other day. I didn't see the video, but I did read the article and stuff like that. And, like, I just have a hard time reading what Beltran was saying to you and how he was explaining what happened when he was with Houston. And it's just like, and then for him to come to the Yes Network and stuff like that, it's just hard for me as a fan to, like, accept him to, like, broadcast games while he was in the middle of that cheating scandal in 2017. And then on top of this, you got this new letter that's coming out that baseball or the Supreme Court is fighting about and stuff like that. And, you know, it's just too much for me at this point.
Well,
and
listen,
like, I don't know how to take this.
You know what? You got to take it the way you feel comfortable taking it. I mean, if you don't feel that Carlos Beltran is somebody that you want to listen to, I you know, that's your choice. But all the guy could do is just come clean. He had not spoken about it at all. So the center stage interview was the first time he ever spoke about it. Now, if you missed the opening of the show, here is Carlos talking about the Astros cheating scandal.
Well, Michael, you know, like, we felt that when teams are coming to our ballpark, we felt that some teams have something going on. So we felt that, you know, we needed to create our own, you know, and that's what happened. We created our own, and our own continued to escalate it to where it ended up.
What exactly did you guys do when you say created your own? What did you guys do?
Well, think about this. Every team in baseball have their video room, almost every team has their video room next to the dugout.
Yeah, right off the dugout.
Our video room in Houston was in the clubhouse. So we needed to run there to see our bats calm down. A lot of times you needed to wait. It was a long ride. Mm-hmm. So we felt, why we don't have our video room next to our dugout? Now all of a sudden we got our video room next to our dugout, and it's easy, it's simple, you know, and we had a feed that was good for us, you know. And
so
we
you're seeing it in real time?
We're seeing the game. At the beginning, we're seeing the game, you know, and when you're seeing the game, you get to see the pitchers, you get to see the catchers, and then we felt that we could use that, you know, but we didn't feel that we were really crossing the line there.
All right, so he said that now he realizes that it is crossing the line. This is from the YES Network at the center stage that previewed before the game today, or debuted. He was asked, did the Astros front office tell you to stop?
Well, if they got the letter, they knew, but right. They never shared it with us.
Right.
Nobody say anything to us, you know. Nobody say anything. I wish somebody would have said something, and a lot of people always ask me why you didn't stop it. And my answer is, I didn't stop it. The same way no one stopped it.
Right.
Because it's working for us. Why are you going to stop something that is working for you?
Right.
So if the organization would have said something to us, we would have stopped it for sure.
And finally, did he cooperate with MLB?
100%.
Yeah.
The part that bothers me about that is that, you know, when I sit down to cooperate with them, they say to me, we're not going against the players. We're going against field personnel, front office, and organization. And the fact that I'm the only player naming in that report. So how that happened? Like, that's the part I don't understand. Everyone gets immunity except Carlos Beltran. I don't get it.
What do you take out of it, Don?
Well, there's a couple of things. Number one, I always hate that defense. Well, you know, everybody else was doing it. We were at a disadvantage because everybody was doing it. Well, how do we know that to be the fact? All right, we know that the Red Sox got thrown in because of the Apple Watch, but... And I guess the White Sox were the ones that kind of called him out on it. Did they do something? But did you get a sense that everybody was doing it so that they had to keep up with the Joneses? That's a serious allegation.
Yeah.
That's kind of like Jose Canseco saying that, you know, 80% of baseball is on steroids. I mean, that's a serious allegation that he felt that they were at a distinct disadvantage because they weren't cheating. Do we know that to be a fact?
I will put it this way. The people I've spoken to, all the good teams, like the best teams, they are pushing it right to the edge. Whether it's cheating or not, that's one man's interpretation. But everybody is trying to gain an edge.
All right, everybody's trying to gain an edge. But I think at some point, you start to look around, and it doesn't take a genius to realize that they were crossing the line. Like, they needed somebody to tell them that? Like, so... Because when this got exposed, Michael, I mean, I think everybody universally thought what they were doing was wrong, except them. They had to be told it. And I had a buddy of mine that texted me. I didn't even think about this, Michael. Is he saying that the Astros championship is tainted because he now works for YES? Would he have said that if he was still working with the Astros? Would he say that if he was a manager someplace else that was not affected by it? So... Listen, I it sounds strange to me to say this. I'm a fan of Carlos, and I think he's a good guy, but I think there's holes in everything that he's saying. I don't buy a word of it, honestly.
Well, you don't buy a word of it.
I don't buy a word of it. Well, I think it's all. I just think it's all garbage. I think they knew what they were doing. Maybe the only thing that you kind of convinced me, Michael, is that maybe management did not tell them. But the letter. All right, maybe management didn't tell them. But do you think they got word that management did get a letter? I mean, God, you can't find out. Everything gets reported in Major League Baseball. They were able to keep that a secret, or did they just choose to ignore it and not listen to it?
I think that Lou now got a letter, and I don't think it ever went downstairs. I think the question, you know, would you say the Astros championship is tainted if you were working for the Astros? We'll never know, right? And
no,
that's the first time he's actually spoken. But no, no Astro player has said that their championship's tainted because they work for the Astros.
Right, exactly. And now he's working for a team where the general manager just like 24, almost on the same day of that, is saying that the World Series was taken from us. That's probably a good tact for him to take. So I think you take that with a bit of a grain of salt. But I listen, I've been on the Astros every second of the way with this one. And I just don't buy the whole everybody was doing it. We didn't realize we were crossing the line. I think they knew exactly what they were doing.
We're going around the bases, brought to you by Nissan. Brian Hoke, who covers the Yankees for MLB.com, got a hold of Brian Cashman. Cashman said he did not hear Beltran's comments on yes. He was also asked if Aaron Judge has agreed to an extension. Cashman said he would not comment. Cashman also wouldn't say if the Yankees have made an offer. So one thing that Brian always learned from G. Michael, don't lie.
Right.
Just don't lie. Don't answer it, but don't lie. So him saying that he wouldn't comment on whether or not they have an agreement, that would lead you to believe they're probably in the ballpark. Does that make sense?
I think they're at the 1 yard line probably, and they know, and Brian knows, and I think Judge knows that between now and Thursday, which might end up being Friday. Now I would think the deadline is not Thursday; it's opening day, right?
Right.
So if they get rained out Thursday, the deadline then becomes Friday. I would be shocked. Here are the two things that'll happen. It'll be leaked out or made official sometime over the next couple of days, or it will be a press conference before the game on opening day that he has signed the deal. That's
well,
my
a lot opinion. Of Yankee fans are waiting for that. That's for sure. That is for sure.
Because why would you do it today? Come on, there's no pageantry into today.
No, and Beltran's the one who said it on the air. I'm sure that if it is in fact true, they were not happy about that. That's not the way to announce something like this. This is a seminal contract in the history of the organization. Be the richest contract they ever gave out.
Well, there's two ways that he could have
averaged per year.
It could be a slip of the tongue where he knows that it's done and he slipped, or he just assumes it's going to be done and said it that way.
That's what I think it is.
I think it's probably that. Because, listen, I don't think Carlos Beltran, and especially in this situation, just because he works for Yes, is in any more of a loop than you are. Right?
No, I think he's in more of a loop. He's pretty close with Cashman.
But Cashman's also buttoned up to know we've got a neophyte in the broadcast booth. I don't not necessarily give him information he might be able to spill.
Right.
God, I know it happens all the time, Michael, and I don't know how hot it is in Tampa, but out there he's showing Chapman, he is sweating. I mean, the tip of his bill.
Yeah, he can sweat with the best of them.
I was just looking at that as he just closed it out and the Yankees win, so we'll be joined by Yes very, very soon.
And that's today's Around the Bases, brought to you by Nissan. Nissan's an easier choice than ever with their exciting and fuel-efficient lineup. Now get great offers across their full line. Shop at your local Nissan store at NissanUSA.com. Got to talk about that great game on Saturday. We will do that. And tonight's national championship game. That's coming up right here on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. This is the Michael K. Show.
Scherzer has a hamstring problem. If you take Scherzer out of the equation, at least for the first time around, Don, Mets really don't have a starter for opening day. And that's how fragile this could be when your team is built around pitching. And the Mets have a good team even without pitching. But when your team, I mean, the strength of your team is pitching, you have to hold your breath, especially when one of the pitchers, Jacob DeGrom, who cannot stay on the field for more than 20 starts a year. Also, I mean, Jacob DeGrom really swings it around, Don. So when he finally spoke over the weekend, he said, yeah, I'm still going to opt out. Really, bud? That's what you're thinking about? How about getting on the field? How about pitching? I mean, to say you're still going to opt out, what if he gives him 10 starts? Does he think somebody's going to give him a lot of money? He's proven that he can't stay on the field.
The Michael K. Show.
I don't think he could throw 100 miles an hour every pitch of the game. I don't think he can.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Good first hour. And we also have the championship of Drop Madness a little bit later on in this hour. Actually, in this segment, Don, I was very, very distressed to find out that you will finally not win Drop Madness.
I will not win Drop Madness. And congratulations to the great Michael Kay for winning Host Sadness, as you beat me pretty good. I think it was like 54-46, 53-47, a convincing win. You are.
I didn't play that, Don. That's not me.
No, I know you didn't. Because Anthony and I are in a really bad place right now.
Really? What happened?
Well, you'll know it when it happens.
Okay. Now,
but,
I
know you didn't play it because you know what? You deserve it. You're the most popular guy on this radio station.
No,
confirmed.
See, when I woke up today, right? I just was looking at Twitter and I saw the early voting and like I was ahead. And Don, I got to tell you, I didn't think there was. And by the way, welcome. Yes, has joined us. I never thought there was a chance I'd win. You are the most popular guy on the station. So here's what I actually texted this to RJ. I think it was a COVID pity vote I got. There's no way that I would beat you. There's no way. People love you. They don't love me. So I was stunned. Absolutely stunned. But it's got to be a real kick in the onions to the host of the show that started this. And really, they started it just for their own self-aggrandizement.
Right.
To not win. I beat Rick, you beat Dave, and the rest is over.
Well, but, you know, I don't think this was a vote for who you love or who's the most popular. It's who's the best.
No, that wouldn't be me either.
And that is you. Because there's a difference. When they throw pound for pound out, like I throw Dave out, that's a compliment to say that you're well-rounded, that you are versatile, and that you are compared to the best. But you're the guy. You're the transmitter.
Stop it.
Well, it was proven today, so congratulations.
I'm Sully.
And listen, it hurt. 5 straight years I won Drop Madness. And I don't know if you're thrilled with what represents your bracket.
No, I'm very unhappy. I'm going to politic against it.
But a win is a win, and I'm rooting for Andrew just because I think that is a terrific drop. So that should be fun today when we do that and christen a brand new champion in year 6 of Drop Madness. Somebody brought this up to me on Twitter, and I wanted to get Andrew's thought on it. They thought it kind of is unfair to put everybody's drops in the same bracket. That if you spread it around a little bit, you might get a truer version of the best drop.
Not a bad thought.
I don't know if it's a lot of work because we kind of just always did that because it's kind of just easier to put all of like my drops in. But there's some killer drops that got beaten because, you know, I'm going against another dropper. I thought you had a great year, a lot of great drops. Peter had a lot of great drops too, and you kind of eat your own young throughout this. What if we spread it out, Andrew? Is that something that could be a lot more fun, or do you like it the way that it is?
So, well, I do like it the way that it is, but that doesn't mean I wouldn't be open to reconsidering. I'm just trying to think, would it just truly be like at random scattered drops all throughout, or would you still want there to be like a yelling region? Where you have all the yelling drops and then like something like that, maybe?
It could be tough just because, I don't know, there might be a year where there isn't that many yelling drops. Like, right. you don't want to have to create drops just to fill the bracket. So you get your 64 and then you kind of just, just randomly put them. How do they do it in the NCAA? They don't really have any rhyme or reason to it, right?
No, other than the one seeds that they try to kind of keep in their geographical region. But, yeah, other than that, no, there's no rhyme or reason.
Andrew Marchand reporting that the Post has learned that the new voice of the World Series on Fox is Joe Davis. Hmm. How old Joe Davis
on TV?
If I had to guess, I'd say he's 38 years old.
No, you'd be much, much too high. He's 34 years old. 34.
Well, how old was Buck when he did his first World Series?
Maybe about 35, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the going rate.
He was a broadcaster of the Montgomery Biscuits in 2012. And he was the guy who replaced Vin Scully in 2016 with the Dodgers.
Once you replace Scully, the World Series is almost like an afterthought.
Well, good luck to Joe. He's a good guy.
No, well, listen, I didn't bat an eye at it just because I think he's great. So who cares how old he is? How old was Eagle when he was calling? I mean, Ian Eagle, Bob Beschews, and these guys were almost born with microphones in their hands.
In their hands.
In their hands, which made for a very difficult birth. For their moms.
Why isn't his name Ian Eagle?
Now, the 98.7 ESPN Hoops update is brought to you by the new name in automotive excellence, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram of Princeton. Visit them at Princeton Jeep, where they will exceed your expectations, or visit them 24/7 at cdjrprinceton.com. Don, I turn to you where I'm confused.
Okay.
All right, so Kansas beat up on Villanova. Villanova, with the injury, they couldn't match up with them. Kansas is big and strong, and they won. And they won the way they were supposed to win. Villanova tried to hang, but, you know, Kansas jumped out to an early lead. I think it was 11-0 before you blinked. So that was not a good start, and they couldn't catch up. And then you had Duke, North Carolina, which I thought lived up to every single one of its Lofty Billings.
No question.
It was that great. But here's the question I have for you. I've never seen dancing on the grave the way people were doing it to Mike Krzyzewski. What has Mike Krzyzewski ever done so wrong to engender that sort of enmity from a fan base? Now, if you're a fan of UNC, I get it. I get it. I get it. Although there should be a level of respect for a guy who's done what he's done. But people just rejoicing. Bomani Jones, who we like, rejoicing on Twitter. Why? Because the guy runs a classy, clean program? What? Why hate the guy?
Unless you don't believe that. Now, we had Bob Costas on Friday. He mentioned that Bomani got into like a really heated debate on his show being anti-Duke. I didn't get a chance to see it yet to know what his angle is. But is it just, hey, this guy has been getting over? Like, do you think he's a cheater and nobody has noticed? Or is there something else? Because, listen, I'm not the biggest college basketball fan, Michael, but Duke's Duke and Krzyzewski's Krzyzewski. Like, for 30 years, it's been great to watch him. I don't know why anybody would hate him other than the jealousy of all the winning and a consistent they've been. So unless there's some other angle that I'm not thinking about, I'm not sure why. I mean, I don't think I know that the book came out, that there were a couple of little things that weren't great, but how I'm sure that would be on anybody's ledger. You write a 300-page book about anybody, I'm sure there's going to be moments they'd like to take back, but nothing to the point where you're rooting against him unless you're just jealous or just hate how great things have been, or a Tar Heel fan.
Well, here's what I don't get, okay? We know there are coaches out there that have been accused and found to have done terrible things in recruiting, and they've been fired, and they don't have the hatred that Krzyzewski had and the joy that people had. I mean, of as great a career as he's had, Don, 3 Olympic golds, 5 national championships, 13 Final Fours, right?
Mm-hmm.
He will never forget that night on Saturday. What an awful end to a glorious career. And UNC has ruined they can't ruin his legacy. But by winning that final game at Cameron, kicked him right in the cubes. And then to end this magical run, kicked him even harder in the cubes. So let me bring in Andrew, who's a big college basketball fan. Andrew, why the hate of this guy?
I have no idea. I think because I feel exactly the same way that you do. I think it just comes down to the same reason that people hate Belichick, although he has cheating scandals to his name with Spygate and even Deflategate to a certain extent. I think it's just people are nauseated by the coverage of Duke because they've won so much. You know, there's so much love that a lot of media oftentimes has for him, and a lot of people maybe are nauseated by it. They've had enough of it. That's the only thing I can think of.
Well, think about it. I mean, if you're of a certain age, the team that you probably hate, Andrew is the same way. Michael, maybe you were when you were a Giant fan growing up. You either loved or hated the Cowboys, right? There's no in-between on the Cowboys. And a lot of that comes from the original America's team with Tom Landry and Roger Staubach and Tony Dorsett. A bunch of classy guys, right? I mean, honestly, what did you hate about the Dallas Cowboys? I mean, I don't – honestly, and listen, I hate him as much as anybody, but really, who's more classy than Tom Landry or Roger Staubach? What did Tony Dorsett ever do to anybody?
But remember, Don, when Landry got banged by Jerry Jones, people didn't rejoice. It was hard to hate Landry.
Well, they didn't rejoice because you felt bad for the guy because they were
falling
apart.
Well, how could you not feel bad for Coach K on Saturday? I felt choked up. I felt so terrible for him.
Well, because I think they might have felt bad for him if they won 4 games this year and his last game was in a regular season game. But again, he goes to the Final Four, right? And on the verge of winning a championship. Again, if Tom Landry had bowed out after a Super Bowl or had lost the – right, Andrew, if Tom Landry's last game was against the Pittsburgh Steelers in the Super Bowl and they lost, people would be dancing on his grave. But he went out with a 4-12 team, so people felt bad for him. But really, you hate the Cowboys because the Cowboys are America's team and everybody loves them or everybody hates them. I just think that Duke's been around and has been a consistent winner for 30 years and people were just sick of it. And he's the face of that.
Jay Williams, who's going to join us at 4:30, texted me a shirt that North Carolina was buying. And it was a grave dug out. And a North Carolina represent might have been their mascot, was kicking Mike Krzyzewski into a grave. I mean, why?
Well,
again, I'm confused by it.
But you get it from North Carolina.
But I remember when the last game at Cameron, or the last game they played at the Dean Dome, I said, why would you boo the guy? I mean, have some respect. He's a classy guy who's done a good job with a program. I mean, one of the probably the best coaching job ever. And there's got to be a point where you put the hatred aside and just appreciate what the guy did. Now, if you were Mike Krzyzewski, Don, wouldn't it have been better to lose to Michigan State in the second game? I think it would have been. To lose to North Carolina, 2 minutes away from going to the national championship game.
True.
It will stay with him to his death.
I know. But there's also something about, you know, getting a team to a Final Four. You know, it's so tough.
But, what a way to go. To North Carolina. He lost his first game to North Carolina, lost his last game to North Carolina.
But it's just been so much winning. And I can see someone, you know, like Peter grew up a Maryland fan. Andrew grew up Syracuse. Like, if you had a team and you've been around college basketball for a long time, it's just like, oh, you're sick of it. Duke. Because it's not just that they win all the time, but it's, they talk about how great Coach K is. It can get nauseating. I get it. If you've been a fan for any length of time and for 30 years you've had to live through that, I can see where you're just like, all right, enough. Stop it. He's not a deity, all right? And you just get sick of it. And that's usually where the hate comes from. Like I said, I hate the Cowboys, but really, what was there to hate about the Cowboys? Now, the second version of America's team with Michael Irvin and Jimmy Johnson, that was a hateable team. But I grew my foundation of hating the Cowboys with a classy team and a classy run organization, but I just hated them because they beat the Giants all the time and they were going to the Super Bowl every year. So you do get sick of it. I think that's more than anything else. You're sick of them.
But you know what? The Snark brought up a great point, Don, on Twitter. Remember the Red Sox fans cheered Derek Jeter, but North Carolina fans can't cheer Coach K after they beat him? After they beat him. I could see if he beat them. Like if the Yankees kept winning championships but you already got your pound of flesh. North Carolina got their pound of flesh, and they're still booing the man? The Red Sox fans couldn't bring themselves to boo Derek Jeter the last game.
It's weird, but that was also after, you know, beating him down 3-0.
Yeah, that's my point. You just beat this guy out of his career. Just beat him out. You kicked him right down the steps, and you still hate him? It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, the shirts were sold before the game, right? So that they were motivated by winning and trying to win a national championship. But listen, if you hate, you hate. I mean, I respect the fact that you can't put it to bed under the best of circumstances. Didn't we kill Peter for rooting for Duke? Right, because he hated more than anybody. So the consistent thing to do is to still hate. I mean, did I have any love for Bobby Cox when he left? And I was disgusted the Mets gave him a gift the last game he managed at Citi Field. What am I bowing down to this guy for? All he did was beat my team in every big spot that he was the manager of the Braves. What am I, Emmitt Smith too? I got to cheer the guy. The Knicks fans, I was sick for Knicks fans when they cheered Michael Jordan in his last game at the Garden. The guy owned you his entire career. I respect that more than like caving, and just all of a sudden out of nowhere after 30 years of hating a guy, you know, start getting teary eyed and wish him a good goodbye. The more consistent thing is. Keep it going. And if you hated him because you were so sick of him, this whole Final Four was about him and St. Peter's. That was it. Thank God for St. Peter's. Otherwise, it would have been Coach K the entire time. And I like him. And I consider myself a guy that probably leans more Duke. My father loved Duke for whatever reason. You know, so I've got no hatred for the guy at all. But it does get nauseating after a while.
Let's go to Rocky in Connecticut. Rocky.
Hello. Good afternoon.
How are you?
Okay. Who am I speaking to?
Well, who'd you call?
Michael Kay.
That's me.
Who's this? Rocky from New Fairfield, Connecticut.
What's up, Rocky?
Another Bronx boy.
Yeah, there you go.
Hello? I just like to say that here's human nature works this way. When people are going up and up and up and up, they cheer you like crazy. Excuse me. But when you're coming down, they cut you to pieces. Human nature does that constantly in every sport, in every way, Hollywood, everything. So, consequently, if you guys don't understand that, I feel sorry for you, because that's the way nature is.
Well, but the guy was, no. But here's that's why it's different, Rocky. It's not like he's had losing seasons or whatever. He's leaving. He's leaving the stage. He has accomplished everything that you'd want to accomplish. Why the hatred? He never had that downfall. He never got caught with a dirty program, ever. You could wonder if it's clean or not. Everybody has investigated it. It's clean. So why all the hate? I don't get the hate.
Andrew, did you see or do you know why Bomani hates Duke?
We have to get him on this year, this week, because it makes no sense.
Again, unless you're just coming from an angle like, yeah, right, he ran it clean. Like, yeah, maybe he got away with something. I don't know. But again, that's that. I never heard of anything to make you think that he didn't run a clean program. And it's not like people aren't checking, unless there's the feeling like, well, he's Coach K, let him do what he wants.
Let's go to Ken in Brooklyn. Kenny.
Hi, this is Kenny in Brooklyn. So just a little background, African-American, grew up in Brooklyn all my life. I listen to you guys all the time. But I work on Wall Street, and I can kind of understand why Bomani James, quote unquote, hates Coach K, because I actually do too. There's a racial component there that it seems like a lot of people miss. And by that, I mean, when you compare how Duke was fit in the college basketball landscape in the 90s, when Coach K was coming up, where you have Christian Laettner was considered, you know, the best and greatest, Bobby Curley, all those other teams. But yet he's stomping on people's chests. You heard, you know, you listened to Bomani Jones' show where you saw the positioning of the teams in terms of the UNLV teams are ranked number one, these quote unquote black teams, but yet Bob Costas called Duke the America's best. And you're just like, wait, what's going on here and why is that?
They beat UNLV, Ken.
Yeah, they beat UNLV, and UNLV was crooked
and
as
also
a question mark.
I mean, you're kind of dancing around this, Ken, but I mean, he's had a roster predominantly of African American players over the last 10
years.
But you
saw that switch where those African Americans at first had to be a quote unquote the right type, as in your Grant Hills of the world, and then you saw him push against one and done's, and all of a sudden he joins the USA team, and now he's getting one and done's. You're like, wait, what is this? This kind of feels disingenuous in many ways. So,
but he explained that.
I was like, well,
after he coached the gold medal team, he said, you know what? I want to coach the best, and he went out and got the best players. And I actually think, Ken, with all due respect, the right type. I mean, he gets African American players that could get into Duke. I mean, why would you pigeonhole somebody as the right type of black player? That's insulting. So there's a wrong type of black player? I don't get that. That's behind Bomani. I mean, I don't want Kenny to speak for Bomani Jones, but that doesn't make sense to me. No good guys and bad guys. Look at the best players he ever had on the team. Grant Hill. Jay Williams. Kyrie Irving. I could go on and on. I could sit here for the next hour and name them. That's ridiculous.
But that underdog team that beat UNLV. Now, if you want to say, well, the stars were Hurley and Laettner, Grant Hill was on that team. And they were an underdog team, and they beat UNLV. UNLV was kind of a hated program because Tarkanian was not likable. That program had a lot of issues surrounding it. They were the big bad team, and Duke upset them. And I think the nation fell in love with Duke.
Well, it's game time, Don. Brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey, and we got a big game tonight for the national championship in the NCAA men's basketball tournament. North Carolina against Kansas, two blue blood institutions. 9:20 start on TBS, and we also want to congratulate South Carolina beating UConn yesterday. I mean, really beating UConn. I mean, just a complete butt kick and a great job by Ryan Rucco on the call on ESPN. But that wasn't even as close as the score, and the score wasn't that close, Don.
And you know, and it was probably a little bit of a shock of UConn getting as far as they did, right? To get there, and it kind of just bottomed out after, you know, Stanford looked like they were the team certainly to beat going in. And then Auriemma, that's the first time he's ever lost a championship game. He's now 11-1.
He's amazing. That's game time, brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey. During the big games this season, enjoy Tullamore Dew, the original triple blended, triple distilled. Triple cask matured Irish whiskey. Remember, when it's game time, it's Tully time. Please enjoy responsibly. You know what it's time for, Donnie?
Yes.
Prop Madness, the championship.
This is huge.
The number one seed from the K region.
Thank you, my friend, and I will see you soon. Say hi to everybody.
All right, be well. You say hello, too.
Okay, take care, Michael. It's Michael K with me here.
Please don't vote for that. And opposing the number one seed from the Nether region.
Andrew, who would you say is the best Brazilian available I could find in the Euros?
Brazil is a South American country, so they're not playing in the Euros.
There you go. He cut down Peter to size. It's a drop that has rocketed through the tournament.
Wow.
But it's the number one seed, so it's not like it's surprising anybody against another number one seed. And this is for the championship, everybody. Vote
is it.
With your heart. Vote with your head. It's at TMCast ESPN on Twitter. The voting is up right now. Greeny bye. Please don't vote for that. And Brazil Euros. It's exciting,
they're
Don. It's exhilarating.
I know you're not happy with how you look with that drop. It's still a gorgeous drop. But so is Andrews and his response, how condescending he was, how it makes Peter look. You know, both are very, very attractive. And it's tough. I voted. I'm not going to tell you what I voted for until after the fact. But it was tough because both deserve to win.
Well, early voting has K up by 10 points. But it's still a lot of time, an hour and 55 minutes left to vote.
That's right.
Go to Twitter, at TMKS ESPN. When we come back, we'll talk to a former Dookie, Jay Williams. I was texting with him, Don, yesterday. And I said, I have no connection with Duke whatsoever. None. And I was absolutely devastated by the way that game went. And I like North Carolina. I like Coach Smith when he was there. I interviewed him. I really enjoyed it. I love what they're about, too. But just to see a guy have such a great career, and that has to be a permanent stain on it. And I said, I can't imagine how you feel. So we'll hear from him how he feels. Jay Williams coming up in just a moment right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
One thing stands out to me. Peter, you sound like I felt 5 days ago. What's going on?
Oh. You know, it didn't really kick in until today. But I guess the combination of these I did two two-hour kickoff shows where I talked a lot, and it was in front of a live crowd, you know, with like with hot mics in front of the crowd. So like it was, I guess, kind of battling over people a bit. And then you're in a stadium for 2 days kind of talking loudly with people too. And here I am. But I feel fine. How do you feel?
I feel better. I really do. I started to feel a little bit better Saturday, Sunday more. And today I woke up and said, let's give this a try.
And you sound great.
I feel good. I was worried that the voice would hold up, especially when you don't talk for that long, because I was pretty much alone. So I was texting people, but you know, I just shut up for a while. Now, everything I've read, Peter, is that WrestleMania was a rousing success. People loved it.
It was. It was incredible. I mean, people loved it this year. It's interesting. I mean, it. I don't know that people expected it was going to be that great. But for whatever reason, it just satisfied in every way. There was just so much fun stuff. I mean, Steve Austin was amazing. I don't know if you guys have seen any highlights of what Pat McAfee did last night, but it was absolutely ridiculous. He put on a show last night. The whole thing, it was beginning to end what WrestleMania is supposed to be. It was so cool. My question for you guys is, how great was Duke, North Carolina? Because I'm not going to sit here and lie and say that I watched it the way I would have if I wasn't at WrestleMania.
Total nail-biter.
Did it?
Yeah.
Lived up to every advanced billing. It got great. I think it's the highest rated cable. Was it basketball games on? It can't be football because there have been football games on cable that did more. But it had an unbelievable number. Probably would have had over 20 million people if it was on CBS and not TBS. But, you know, it's hard to live up to that sort of hype. I thought it overreached that, Don. I thought it was better than the hype.
It was captivating. It really was. There was never a moment where you felt like the game was decided until you got down to the very end. Even after those two missed foul shots by Duke, they still had hope. They still had a chance, and the drama was great. I thought the game was called well. There was just a lot of great. It really kind of just messed it up for tonight, honestly, because there's no way tonight lives up to the same billing, and it doesn't have the same intrigue, right, because Coach K is gone. I guess, does the nation now turn to North Carolina because now they're the underdog? I guess it's, what, the first 8 seed to get to the championship game? Is that correct?
Is it the first, really, ever? Wow.
I don't know.
Villanova did. No, that can't be right.
I thought I had heard maybe this is the lowest seed North Carolina team to get to the championship. I'm sure that's probably
that
the
sounds
case.
Right for sure. But the thing is, even though they're an 8 seed, because they're North Carolina, it doesn't quite feel like they're that big a dog. I mean, they're 4-point.
Well, they were a much better team at the end, so they became an 8 seed because they started off slowly, but they found themselves at the end. So, it's interesting because this is by the way, he would be the first year coach to win a national title in his first year since Steve Fisher replaced Bill Frieder with Michigan.
Yep.
So he didn't have the team the whole year. That was in 1989 when Michigan won. But this would be the first guy, you know, takes over for Roy Williams, did the whole year, and he's done a magnificent job. And for Jay Williams to say that he outcoached Duke, that says a lot.
And, you're right. When you look at what they've done over the last – I think they've lost 2 out of their last 16 or 17 games. I mean, North Carolina's turned into a serious, serious team.
Now, how does it go, right? Like, what's their emotion level now after what happened on Saturday? Now, the championship is right there. The chip's there. So that should be motivation enough. But you can't ignore the emotion of beating your arch rival and all of the pomp and circumstance that went into that game, and you just don't want to have a letdown. Or it could go the other way like it did for the Red Sox when they beat the Yankees. They just squashed the Cardinals, right? So are they just going to be on fire and now they're just destined to win the championship, or do they let down against a really, really good team that will definitely take advantage of any weakness the Tar Heels have tonight?
Well, again, it'll be at 9:20 tonight on TBS.
That's late. I'm sorry. I don't know, man.
I mean, they always talk about, like, kids. Well, how could kids? I mean, my son wants to watch it. He can't stay up that late.
Again, it's amazing how they pander to the West Coast, honestly. Listen, it's college basketball, so it probably engulfs all 50 states like nothing else because you've got alumni and this great college basketball all over this country. But, guys, and I know the games don't run long. College basketball, I guess, is the shortest of all of them. But still, you're talking about a game that's – if it's really intriguing and dips into overtime, it's going to be to, like, midnight. Charlie, probably this is right around the time where I was like getting caught up in things like that, and no way my mom
and Dad would let me stay up even for the tip.
All right, let's just take a brief time out because we have Aaron Boone coming up in just a moment with a special announcement to join that. So this is going to be fun. Stick around for this. I promise you it's Kay, LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
I've got some good Maryland news, Peter. I don't know if you saw this.
Please.
There's another exclusive story from Andrew Marchand of the Post. The Mets have hired Jake Eisenberg as part of their radio booth to do play-by-play when Howie's not there, about 20 or 30 games. And Jake is a 2017 graduate of the University of Maryland.
Hey.
How about that?
Just a few years after me.
Yeah, okay, I'll play. Yeah.
Define a few.
Just 15.
Just 15.
That's
this
it.
90, and he probably just went the requisite 4 years. You went five.
Correct.
Probably would have gone four if you could pull it off.
I listen, you can't embarrass me or shame me for taking 5 years to graduate from Maryland, okay? That fifth year got me a national championship, Michael. They needed me there.
Got me, Don. Got me a national championship. Wow. Look
no,
at
so
you.
That was nice of them to do that for you. As a graduation present.
I mean, that was actually Gary Williams. He used that as a carrot. Let's get Peter a national title.
That's right.
That was the big motivating cry for that team.
Yep. So many people said, yeah, let's do it for Peter. This 98.7 ESPN Hoops update brought to you by Superbook Sports. Place your bets at Superbook Sports where they will match you dollar for dollar up to $1,000. Visit superbook.com to get signed up and place that bet. Have a gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER tonight. University of North Carolina against Kansas. I think it's going to do well, guys. I think it could be a good game, but I think all the juice got taken out of it when Coach K got defeated. Maybe because I was so engaged in that storyline, but I think even the biggest college basketball fan said, if it's Coach K against Kansas tonight, I think it gets at least 5 million more viewers.
No question. Well, that brings people to the table, right? But if you get a game like you got Saturday, that'll keep people in. Because, listen, the Coach K factor was around that whole thing, but still how competitive it was, how much fun it was to watch. So it's going to be very difficult for the championship game to live up to the competition and also the storyline. But this North Carolina team is an 8. You're going up against, you got two blue bloods. I think the number is going to be great. I don't think it will. It'll be one of those rare situations where it'll probably lose to Duke, North Carolina. I don't know if you're going to get 16 million to watch the game tonight, but maybe people want to follow the story and see if North Carolina can complete this.
It's a great story in itself.
No,
Don,
it is.
Right. It's a great story for Hubert Davis to take over for a legend. In fact, it's two guys that took over for Roy Williams. Bill Self took over all those years ago, I think 19 years, when Roy Williams left to take over North Carolina. And then Hubert Davis just took over for Roy Williams. And Roy Williams never got the grand go-away like Mike Krzyzewski did, because he really didn't announce it till the end.
Right.
But Roy Williams is a great coach, too, one of the best of all time.
And look what this does for Davis, right? I mean,
yep. We'll
see what kind of coach he ends up being over the long term. But, heck, and nobody's ever going to forget he beat Duke in the Final Four. And if he can win the national championship, I mean, you're talking about this, a tremendous career ahead of him and what he's been able to accomplish so far. So many. That's what you want. You want storylines to kind of suck the rest of the world in, but it's going to be tough to top Saturday. Saturday was really spectacular.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Bill in Westchester. Billy.
Hey there, guys. Like the show. Love the show. Glad
Thanks.
You talk about sports. That's a novelty. How are you guys doing?
Good. How about you?
Good. Hey, just had a question on Coach K. Good discussion. And I just had a theory. I just want to run by you, get your thoughts. It almost seemed to me, because I went to North Carolina a long time ago, been watching him and kind of from the recliner, coaching, rooting against him. And he always had that intensity that you talked about. And I'm wondering, I also work with college students. I wonder maybe if you think that maybe because college kids have changed, or I should say college students change with that intensity, maybe that style kind of outlived its effectiveness now, and maybe it made him less of a coach or less of a powerful coach. To win games like those last two losses against UNC. So wanted to get your thoughts on that.
It's an interesting take. I mean, I think college students certainly have more power than they used to. But, I mean, you can't say the guy stayed too long when he just took a team to the Final Four. I mean, he did a pretty good job. Maybe that's a style that doesn't play anymore. But I don't know. I think he's still a great coach. I think if he came back next year, they'd be a Final Four contender. So, you know, people, I saw there was a story over the weekend. You know, other, he hasn't won an ACC regular season title in a long time. I think he won this year. That was, but it had been like a number of years. Well, he's coached different teams. He's got one and dones now. And I think it takes the whole season to get them right for the postseason. So you don't get enough wins along the way to win the ACC regular season title. But he, you know, he had that bad. Last year it was canned because of the COVID.
Yep.
And then the year before that, the whole tournament was out. But when he finally had a full season again with fans in the stands, they're in the Final Four. So, no, I think he was still a great coach.
And we had that caller earlier in the or later in the last hour that made the point about him caving to the one-on-one, like it was fraudulent. What, you got to adapt to the time. This is the way you win now in college basketball. What was he supposed to do, resign?
Well, it felt fraudulent to people because he was so ardently against it.
But what do you do?
So
like I said, do you resign or do you say or do you go out there and continue to coach the old way and lose and have no shot at a championship?
I mean, if we were going by sheer fraud standards, then yes, the standard it would be resign. That would be the answer. Just as a fraud.
But I
wouldn't do that.
Let's go to Lorenzo in Queens. Lorenzo, hello?
Yeah, how you doing? Big fan.
Thanks.
But I'm really surprised that your lack of empathy. Your lack of empathy, considering your background in media and journalism. Coach K is renowned for treating student media and press like dirt. He threatens them, berates them, disses them, and these are the future journalists and media of the future. And these are your future colleagues.
Do you really believe, wait a minute, do you really believe that the North Carolina kids, that they were kicking him to a grave and had shirts that said Coach K's funeral, that they cared because he was rude to the Duke student paper? Really,
no, I mean people in general. I mean, like throughout the any college basketball fan that's just aware of this. It's easy to root against him. It's easy to celebrate his losses because there's a double standard. Anyone else that acts like him is treated like a villain.
Acts like what? I mean, yeah, you know, college coaches actually believe that they're God. I mean, Deion Sanders wouldn't answer a question because the guy didn't call him Coach, called him Deion. So they're on a different level. I'm sure that Nick Saban's like that as well. Let's look at the entire body of his work, Lorenzo. The guy, as far as we know, ran a pristine, clean program. Before there were one and dones, his kids graduated. They went on to become productive members of society. They all absolutely adore him. I mean, there's stories in that Coach K book by Ian O'Connor that are disturbing, that, you know, he yelled at student journalists and all that. I get it. But for what college coaches are you going to hang that on his head? Sorry, I'm not taking that. That's
not
the
really,
reason he's hated.
If the caller was done, is that really why you don't like him? Really?
I think that he's not liked because he's great, because his teams are great all the time. People don't like that.
Mm.
Although that didn't play with Joe Torre. People love Joe Torre, and they were great all the time.
Well, Torre was likable. I mean, listen, Coach K is a lot of things. He's an icon. He's an all-time great. He's not likable. I wouldn't say his personality's remotely like. He doesn't smile. Like, these are very basic things. Don, I don't think this is crazy to say. Like, if you handle yourself in a way where you seem very stern and have sort of a nasty look on your face all the time, and on top of that you're really good, your people who are not a supporter of yours will not like you.
See, but
period.
I think that's unfair with the no smile. He has no lips. It's hard to smile.
That's a great point.
But he really has no
lips.
Use teeth. Even his daughters have brought it up. He has no lips.
But it's really difficult. Like you said, Joe Torre was managers in baseball are different. Even back before analytics, unless you were really like a Whitey Herzog or a Earl Weaver that were out there, or a Lou Piniella or a Billy Martin, where you had like a lot of personality and you put yourself out there where people can judge you. But when you're talking about, he's the face of the program, all right? People hate the Yankees. People hate the Cowboys, right? People hate certain teams that are dominant, the Canadians back in the day, but they have different players and different coaches to come in and out. They didn't even know Duke existed before Coach K, most people. And then during the entire length of this run, he's been the face more than any other player. The longest you could stay there is 4 years. He's the face. Who's the face of the Cowboys? I mean, you've got different generations of Cowboys, different generations of Yankees, different generations of Boston Celtics. But do you really have – but Duke, this is the guy. So you're either going to love him or you're going to hate him. That's the face. No single player, no president. No, this is the guy.
It's so funny that, you know, he treats people poorly. Well, the guy that was, you know, his mentor that he no longer has any connection with, Bobby Knight. I never saw anybody revel in Bobby Knight losing, ever, when he lost in an NCAA. This guy visibly treated people terribly.
That's an interesting point.
This guy is Bobby Knight 2.0 true. Without all the baggage.
But he's much
Indiana
better.
Was never this good for this long.
Yeah, never. That's the thing.
But he was still – Bobby Knight was considered the gold standard. And then, you know, the world opened up and we saw exactly what Bobby was.
No, of course.
I think that ruined his legacy. Mike Krzyzewski's legacy is not going to be ruined because he yelled at the student newspaper guys.
No, that guy was reaching for something. He does not like Duke for the same reason everybody else does not like Duke, is because of how dominant they've been, and they're probably sick. And unless you're a fan, you're probably like, all right, I'm tired. I'm tired of hearing about
them. It's also regarded as a very rich, elite, non-diverse school, and it puts a lot of people off. People who get in there and go and get to get the amazing education and all the benefits of Duke, I think they feel, of course, they love it. But when you look at this elite school in a place that exists, by the way, in Durham, in a place that is not, you know, does not necessarily thrive economically, there's a lot of reasons that they're villainous. And it's not because of morals necessarily, but there's a lot of aesthetic to Duke that makes them very hateable.
Oh, but then, you know, Pete Carril wasn't hated, and he was the head of Princeton. I mean, that's an elite institution.
Like, Princeton's not Duke.
What do you mean it's not Duke? It's even above it.
Basketball-wise, they were underdogs. But, they weren't number one.
I get it, but he was a legendary coach.
Yeah, but the main thing, to Peter's point, all right, the winning's the main thing. So now, and I really think to what I asked Jay Williams, and I don't think he got the question because I really wanted to get his answer, is that I got somebody on Twitter saying, you know, Georgetown was great, but the media didn't love John Thompson. Media didn't love Patrick Ewing. They didn't talk up Georgetown the way they talked up Duke. They didn't talk up UNLV the way they talked up Duke. You know, and he was taking the racial aspect of was Duke the great white hope, literally, to beat the predominantly black schools. I think it was the other way around. I think it was probably the fact that UNLV was a cricket program, and then when Duke came in, it looked like these are guys that are going about it the right way. But even that rubs people the wrong way, to Peter's point, because there's almost this prestige, like Duke is kind of hovering above it all, while a lot of other schools have done some great things and didn't get acknowledged the way Duke did. Georgetown was dominant for a long time. Was anybody in love with Georgetown? Or were they public enemy number one?
No,
from the get-go.
And people weren't in love with John Thompson from the outside looking in, but he did the right thing by his kids, and he was not celebrated when he finished his career. And people weren't happy that he walked away. People are, like, dancing on this guy's grave.
Right. But they're dancing on his grave for all the years that we held this guy up as the gold standard when they probably – and, again, I'm talking for these people that felt like, well, why wasn't John Thompson treated that way? Georgetown is a heck of a school. Right, so well, why wasn't Georgetown held up to that standard? UNLV is different because that was a crooked program, and we knew that. But there's a lot of other schools that also did it the right way. It's like Notre Dame in college football, Michael. They get held to a different standard than everybody else because the perception is that they do it the right way and they graduate their kids. And when they were winning championship after championship, you don't think there were people that fell in love with them, but then there was the other people that were like, I'm just sick and tired of hearing about Notre Dame, so I'm going to hate them.
Let's take a brief timeout. We'll come back. Talk a little bit about the Nets and what's happening with them. It's scary, dude. Scary. Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Don't know if you heard, but the Red Sox have placed Chris Sale on the 60-day IL with the cracked rib, so he's going to miss at least 2 months as well. And I said it on this show. So have you been? How long have we been on the air, Don?
Since 1947.
Right. So when they signed Sale to that extension when they didn't have to, he wasn't a free agent, I said this is a colossal mistake. Colossal. His size is going to get hurt, and all he's been is hurt during that extension. And it's just been like setting fire to that money for the Red Sox, but that was a Dave Dombrowski move, and now Chaim Bloom has to live with it. But that's a big blow for the Red Sox, who are not that deep in pitching. And, you know, we'll make our picks maybe on Wednesday. But Don and Peter, I take a good look at this, and you know, Yankee fans aren't going to like me for this. I don't know, as presently constituted, how the Blue Jays don't win the division. I mean, the Yankees are going to make the playoffs as a wild card, and maybe if everything goes well, they'll bat. The Blue Jays are really nasty.
Yeah, they're really good. But can they beat the Yankees in a big spot too? You know, we've been down this road before. This is not – I don't think they've been this good, but they've been good for a little while now, and the question is, can they beat the Yankees in a big spot? They're not. It's not the Twins level, but it's that – you know, when it comes down to it in the race here, the Rays have proven they've got the stomach for it. Do the Blue Jays have it?
Well, I think that the Blue Jays just take a next step because they're young and they play a lot of games.
Right.
So now all the young players are older. You bring in a Chapman. You have Barrios for the full season. You bring in Gausman. Manoah, another year older. I mean, they've got the goods, man. They really do.
No,
they're
they
primed
do.
And ready. And every team that goes into Toronto might be shorthanded. Not just the Yankees. See, there are a lot of teams that don't have vaccinated players, and that's going to be an issue. So they're going to have a real home field advantage.
That is something they have to take advantage of, right? Like we don't want to speculate who the Yankees may be, but with May 5th, that'll be the first series up in Toronto, which is, you know, basically a month from tomorrow. So, you know, if you go in there with a couple of significant players, I mean, the Jays are expected to win those games. They got to take advantage of that because that's a great advantage to have. Because I would think just about every team that plays in Toronto will be light a player for that series.
Yeah.
There's probably an unvaccinated player on every team in Major League Baseball. Is that too much of a stretch?
No, I don't think it's a stretch. No,
all right, probably. So some of them might be role players, might be starters. They weren't going to go anyway, relievers you might not use. But there's going to be some teams that might go in there with a pretty significant bat or a pretty significant starter, and they're going to have to, you know, rejigger their rotation to avoid having to not pitch that player in that particular series. Like, it could wreak a lot of havoc to teams if they've got – more than just a couple of unvaccinated players. And it doesn't look like it's changing, so this could go on all year.
It's time now for the 98.7 ESPN Hoops Update, brought to you by Superbook Sports. Place your bets at Superbook Sports, where they will match you dollar for dollar up to $1,000. Visit superbook.com to get signed up and place that bet. Have a gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Have you noticed what's happened to the Nets?
Oh, yeah, or what's not happening.
They're
winning.
In 10th place, and they lost a game over the weekend to the Hawks that they had to have at home. Must win. Kevin Durant scored the most points he's ever scored in a game, 55. And Kyrie, who's not shooting well, still added 31. And they lost. So here is the enormity of them being in the 10th spot. They have to win two games to get into the playoffs. Two. So they have to win the 9-10 game. And then they have to play the loser of the 7-8 game in order to get in. Here's Bobby Marks, knows basketball as well as anybody, talking about the Nets situation.
I don't think they're going to get out of the plane. You know, it's funny, after the Simmons trade, all these Vegas or these sports sites, they still have these guys as a favorite. And I'm thinking, like, am I missing something here? Like, what am I missing that still has the Nets as a favorite? And everybody said, oh, it's all, you know, they got KD, you know, and Kyrie will come back. But I'm looking at the rest of the roster here. And I know tonight in Atlanta, they're shorthanded, no Dragic, Curry, Bruce Brown here. I don't see Ben Simmons stepping on the court for the play-in. They get to a first round, maybe if a team advances here. So certainly from a depth standpoint, they are lacking.
Well, Bobby was prescient because it came out today. Ben Simmons is not suiting up for the regular season. He's not going to play in any of the play-in games in all likelihood. And if I had to guess, guys, he's not playing this year. So that's a complete sunk trade. They traded a great player like James Harden for a guy who's not going to play. Now, hopefully he'll play next year. But you took away one of the components of your team that made it a favorite to win, and you took him away.
Yeah.
And you got nothing back in return for this season. And, you know, Kevin Durant blamed himself today because he was injured and they could never get on a roll. Don't blame yourself, Kevin. It's on Kyrie. Because we're seeing Kyrie, what's happening. He's not used to playing every game. And now he's showing fatigue. His offense is not the same as it was. So Kyrie's situation really derailed everything. Kevin Durant's injury didn't help. But they have no cohesion. They haven't played together. And well, even if they win the first round, Peter, are you going to put Ben Simmons in the second round? He's going to help?
Well, and now you have a trade that's I mean, listen, we can't project to the future, but we have a trade that in this moment is an abject failure, essentially.
Well, And
I mean,
also,
Harden would have been playing by now. I maintain James Harden wasn't throwing away a season. I know he wasn't that into it at that point in time, but right now they got rid of Harden and they have nothing.
And another year goes off the board, right? This will be the second year with Durant and Kyrie if they don't even get out of the play-in, so both of those years are gone. You know, and you go into next year, yeah, you hope everything is okay, that Simmons can now play, because if Simmons ends up not playing, because he hasn't played since the playoffs last year, so if he doesn't play this year, now you got to fast forward to next October, November. I mean, that's a long time not to play.
And he has a herniated disc in his back.
And so that, yeah, you know, back problems, Michael, in any sport, they flare up all the time. It just, listen, I still want to judge this deal after it's all over, Peter, because, yeah, you put all your eggs in this year's basket, it's going to look bad. But Simmons comes back healthy next year, they can still get a couple more kicks of the can, and who knows, if they win the championship the next 2 years and Philadelphia doesn't do anything, all of a sudden the Nets won the deal. But right now it's not looking good, and it could end up being another wasted season. Now they got four games left to kind of get out of this. They're only a game back of Atlanta, who's red hot. They've won five in a row.
But they have the tiebreaker, Atlanta, so they're two back.
So, yeah, two with four to play, so you're still going to have to hope they lose.
And they can't drop out of 10th, the Nets. So the Nets have clinched the play-in spot, but 9th and 10th, that's not where you want to be. You got to win two games. Two games.
Now, their schedule is pretty decent, right? They play their home against Houston at the Knicks.
Knicks been playing great.
No, they have been playing better, for sure. They killed
Orlando.
Orlando yesterday. Then home against Cleveland, home against Indiana. So they should go at least 3-1.
Well, they might not beat Cleveland.
Right. So I still think they could beat the Knicks. Listen, if you want to play, if you want to get out of that 10 seed and get the 8, you better go at least 3-1. Now, what is it? What is Atlanta looking at? See if I can punch up their schedule quickly.
And that game, by the way, was in Atlanta, the one they lost.
And
I think
Atlanta,
I said it was in Brooklyn.
With an effect, because they've got the tiebreaker, a two-game lead. They're at Toronto, home against Washington, at Miami, at Houston.
So at least 2-2.
Right. So that would be enough.
Yeah, the magic number's 2.
So if they win, if they go 2-2, then
no, then the Nets could catch them. If the Nets go 4-0, and they
right, the Nets would have to run the table.
Right.
And listen, the Knicks don't have much to play for, but I'm sure a chance to hurt the Nets will motivate them.
We mentioned it quickly earlier. Congratulations to South Carolina and Dawn Staley, their head coach, defeating UConn for the national championship last night. And Alan Hahn said on his show, guys, that Dawn Staley could end up being the first coach in the NBA, first women coach in the NBA. That's how good she is.
Wow.
Well, they seem set up that of the four major sports, they seem the closest to have that chance, right?
You would think.
Although baseball's done a great job of getting women assistants. The Yankees have hired a manager for their minor leagues, right? Down in Tampa, right? I forget what league it's in, but I think they've got a coach, and then the Giants have a bench coach.
Now,
but it definitely feels like basketball could be the one.
Well, because you can build the resume with women's college basketball, right?
A lot of people are correcting me. The Nets have the tiebreaker on Atlanta. Charlotte has the tiebreaker on the Nets, so
okay.
I apologize. If all three finish tied, the Nets finish ahead of both.
That makes a big difference. They still got to start winning games here. It doesn't – right, forget about where they finish. They're already locked into the play-in. They can't climb out of that. If they get stuck – I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling a run to the title. And this is – I've said this before. This reeks of last year where everybody, even though the Lakers were coming out of the play-in, that they were going to make a run to the title. They got out of the play-in and got squashed by Phoenix. So that's a lot of work to have to do. I don't feel like this team's winning a championship. Do you?
Unless it just sinks in. We've always sang the praises of the Nets performance staff. All they are is hurt. They're always hurt. They never get the players back. They're always hurt. I mean, Curry is hurt with that ankle. I mean, he plays and then he sits down. He plays and then he sits down. It's amazing. All right, so the Nets are 10th in the East, would need two play-in victories. All right, that we know. Yeah, it's not broken down the way I would want it to.
So there's, like, what they have to do. Obviously, if they run the table, they're great.
They have the softest remaining schedule in the league. Eighth-seeded Atlanta, whom they trail by a game, has the 19th hardest. Ninth-seeded Charlotte, even with the Nets and holding the tiebreaker, is the 20th toughest.
Now, here's the thing. Miami is the second-to-last game for Atlanta.
Right.
Miami could clinch the one seed by then. They've got a two-game lead on the Celtics. So are they going to play anybody if they've clinched the one seed?
Probably not. And they haven't been playing great at all.
And then they play Toronto. Toronto's already locked up staying out of the play-in, right? I guess they haven't yet, but they've got a three-game in the loss column over Cleveland. They could still catch Chicago for seventh, but they can't. To fifth, but they can't get the fourth. Toronto may not have anything to play for when they play them. So we look at the difficulty of the schedule, Michael. But you know, I don't know if those teams are going to try to win that late in the season.
Yeah, you never know what they're going to roll out there. They just want to be healthy for the playoffs. We'll come right back, take some phone calls, and ENN after that. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.